This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Greetings and salutations,
country.
How's it going?
Hey, it was going really good until Sunday around 7:45 p.m. And then,
Yeah, I know. I haven't. You know, the only match I didn't watch of that was the pre-show match. I forgot to go back and watch it because I didn't start it. Well, I was ready to go for work about 20 minutes at 10. I like to leave at 10 o'clock for my 11 o'clock shift. Give me time to take my time getting there, getting in the building, getting myself set up so I can replace my the person I'm replacing. And
right.
You know, technically I log in at like quarter of the hour. So I was like, well, I'll watch the Money in the Bank women's ladder match because that was the opening match. And good God, this is my note. It says, no matter what they do on SmackDown to fix this, it will always go down that this first historic women's Money in the Bank ladder match ends when a man retrieves the briefcase and throws it down to his girlfriend, forever tarnishing the match.
Yes.
Yeah, that sums it up. The match wasn't even that good. Anyways, let's just go with that.
There were a couple parts that I thought were decent. Which were, you know, you knew that Charlotte was going to do something crazy off the ropes to the floor, and she did.
Yep, she did. That was pretty spectacular.
But no one made full use of the ladder to do moves.
No, even when...
I was kind of expecting.
Even when James Ellsworth dumped Becky Lynch off the ladder, she wasn't at the top. She, like, took two steps down, and she dropped from less than the height of the top rope. To hit the top rope. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I wasn't impressed at all with this pay-per-view as a whole.
No, there was like one half hour that I was excited about. And that's about it.
My favorite thing about this whole pay-per-view was the fact that Roman Reigns wasn't on it. I mean, that was good, right? No. But
you know what?
What?
I'll put it like this.
Yeah.
This pay-per-view was so bad.
Yep.
Putting Roman Reigns on it may have made it better.
Fair enough. Moving right along, so we can talk about this as little as possible, to be honest. But just like moving right along, the tag titles match, New Day wins by countout when the Usos walked
garbage.
Out. Okay, I'll say this. I like the finish because it's the first... See, I like it because it's the first time they've ever wrestled. It keeps the feud going. No one's getting in a clean pin on each other. For storyline-wise, I like it. The match itself was terrible.
Okay. I agree with you that the finish was a good move, but after the garbage ending of the first match, you needed to have an actual finish.
Well... I guess
that was
okay.
My thing.
I get what you're saying.
You have a bullshit finish to the first match.
Yep.
And now you have a bullshit finish to the second match. And it's one of those, well, I can already see everything else that's going to happen from the rest of the night.
Yep.
So why even bother getting invested in anything? You know?
Yeah.
You're right. The match was
a total
botch fest.
Oh, it was just a bad match. Bad match. The Usos looked terrible. New Day didn't look good. Them working over Kofi's back the whole time was ridiculous because of, you know, near the end when all of a sudden he had Superman-like skills and it didn't bother him. And
yep. Before we go on, I do want to say one thing.
Yep.
About the women's ladder match.
Yep.
I do think Carmella was the right choice to win.
What?
And I'll put it like this.
Because she can be obnoxious with it to the point you hate her?
That's part of it.
Yep.
And I mean, and she proved it during the women's title match where she comes down like all high and mighty with the referee about to hand it over. And then she's like, nah, and walks away.
Yeah.
But look, Charlotte doesn't need this. She'll win the belt without it.
Yeah.
Becky Lynch doesn't need it. She could win the belt without it.
Yeah.
Tamina, no one cares. So putting it on her, it wouldn't really do anything. She has no real heat either way.
Right.
And Natalya, it's another one. Like, meh. You know, so out of everyone in the match, it makes the most sense to put it, you know, put it on Carmella.
Hard to argue with that. But that's some good logic you got going on.
You know, I mean, also she is, I guess, the most rookie-ish of them all. So it gives her, you know, a way to elevate herself a little bit more too.
Yeah, it helps build her along without. Okay. I still think the match was terrible, and I hated the finish.
Oh, no. I 100% agree.
Like, seriously, no matter who won that match, the fact that none of the competitors in the match retrieved the briefcase, I mean, like, you could go with saying, oh, what, they didn't think that the woman could do it? I mean, like, there's so many things that could be said or done or whatever, but having someone not in the match retrieve the briefcase and hand it to his, you know, like, that was just...
Yeah.
That's just garbage. That's not, now they have so much heat. She didn't even win it herself, blah, blah, blah. It's just garbage. It takes away from everything that they work so hard on doing.
Yeah, I agree.
It really and truly just does. Such garbage.
Yep.
Such garbage.
Speaking of working over Kofi's back... for him to be Superman at the end. What did you think of Naomi taking an ass kicking for an entire match and then hitting one move and popping up like she's perfectly fine when she wins?
Okay, so I will say this. When it comes to the women's title match, obviously Naomi won when she submitted Lana. Visually, I thought Lana looked great. I enjoyed her outfit, her ring gear. Naomi kicks out of Lana's finisher the very first time she ever used it. That's good. That made lots of sense.
Sure did.
But if I'm being realistic, you know, honestly, the match itself really wasn't that terrible. Like, I thought it was going to be a lot worse. It was better than I expected it would be, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
It exceeded my expectations.
Yes.
But my expectation of it being negative 50 on a scale of 1 to 10 probably helped that along.
Yes.
I thought Naomi did not look great.
Yep.
I thought Lana looked very... I don't know if nervous is the word... Or
well, think about
not
it.
At ease.
She's had one match on quote unquote WWE TV, and that was like a 10-woman tag. She's maybe had one match on NXT TV, and she's done some NXT house shows. So this is really her kind of, you know, first one-on-one. The match is riding on her, a lot of pressure on her shoulders type of thing, you know, in front of that big of an audience. So I totally get the nervousness part of it all.
Yeah.
But. I thought the finish was garbage. I thought the finish was absolute junk, absolute garbage.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, what I meant with Lana, it's like she would do a move and then be like, and then go and do another thing. That's all I meant, you know. And obviously, you know, not having the experience is a huge part of it.
Oh, yeah. No.
I mean, this is like the title match.
I know.
You'd think that, especially because it's her first real match.
Yeah.
And they kept talking about it. Being her, you know, you'd think that they would really work at it.
Right.
You know, come up with something for her, but who knows?
No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. I smell what you're cooking. Then we had the debut of Mike Marina Kanellis after that. Good for Mike Bennett. He's a nice guy. I enjoy his ring work.
I do too, but I don't like that they made him Mike Kanellis.
The best thing that what's his face? JBL said all night was he took her name, huh?
Yeah.
I thought that was a little bit dumb, but
it doesn't make sense. I mean, I'm waiting to see if they do something on SmackDown with them.
Maybe.
But I don't know. I was excited when she came back. I was talking to your cousin throughout the show, and he had no idea who she was.
He had no idea who Maria was?
He was asking me. I don't know
Damn
if he was
it,
serious
Paul,
or not.
Paul, come on. Well, you know what, though? She did leave the Federation like 7 years ago, and he didn't start watching until like 6 years ago.
And when he did used to watch, I'm pretty sure he stopped before she came in.
Yes, he did.
So,
she would be part of that TNA era that he didn't care for. Not Total Nonstop Action, tits and ass. WWE Championship match. Okay.
I did not like the placement of this match on the card.
Go ahead.
If you're going to do the Money in the Bank, you got to have it before the title match so that there's the possibility that in the head of people watching that something else might happen.
I agree. I do agree with that 100%, and I think they should have done that.
You know, but I mean, obviously, the best match ended the show. But
so I went into this match with the thought and view of I'm not going to think about Jinder Mahal's past. I'm not going to think about Randy Orton's past. I'm just going to watch this match like it's the first time I've ever seen either one of these guys wrestle in the ring. With that, because like it's like I think about like sometimes I go to an indie show and I have no idea who the guys in the ring are because I've never seen them before. Okay, or maybe I've heard the name, but I've never seen them. And so when you don't have any biases, it's, you know, it's easier to enjoy it. So that's what I tried to do. I tried to go in this watching it, just appreciating this match for what it was. And I watched it twice for this reason. And I'm going to say that
You watched it two times too many?
Nope. I actually liked the match. I wasn't expecting to at all, but I did. I liked the match. I hated the finish.
Yep, I did not like the match.
I hated the finish
because of the finish.
So much passion that it completely took away the rest of the match. You know, if they would have had the Singh brothers interfere and they just would have thrown him out, and then they wrestled some more, and then Mahal hit his finish and got the pin clean in the ring, okay. But the fact that Randy goes on a rampage, beats the crap out of both of them, puts one through a table, on and on and on and on. All while not getting counted out, and then slides in the ring, takes a boot in the gut, and is finished, and that's it?
I called the finish.
No.
I was talking to your cousin.
Yeah.
At the start of the match, I said, you know what's going to happen? What's going to happen is somehow he's going to get outside the ring, tangled up with the Singh brothers.
Yep.
As soon as he comes back in the ring, it doesn't matter what has happened in the entire rest of the match.
Yep.
It doesn't matter at all if Randy Orton literally has beaten Mahal into a bloody pulp in the center of the ring who cannot even move because all of his bones are broken.
Yep.
He's going to get up, he's going to hit his finish, and he's going to win 1-2-3 right in the center. And as the match is going on, he's like, no, I don't know. Like, it looks pretty close. And then he's outside with the guys. And I said, here it comes. He goes, you sure? And there it was. And I said, well, that was super exciting. Yeah, I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. And again, it's to prolong the feud that nobody cares about in the first place.
Yeah, I just wasn't a fan of the finish, like, at all. Like, I agree with everything you just said as far as, like, as soon as he went to the floor, I went, son of a bitch, that's exactly what's going to happen. What you just said, you know, I said, as soon as he slides in the ring, you know, he's going to get hit with his finish or something, or he's going to go for the RKO, but he's going to reverse it at least. Like, he'll hold on and then lock him in and hit his slam. At least that would look kind of cool, but nope.
Yeah.
Kick in the gut, you know, freaking Cobra Clutch Slam, 1-2-3.
The only thing I think that would have made it mildly better is if all the old guys outside just beat the crap out of the Singh brothers.
Yep, that would have made it a lot better.
You know, I mean, I could have dealt with the finish a little more if when they went after, you know, Bob Orton.
Well, did you see Sergeant Slaughter? Like, Flair stood up, but Sarge is just sitting there watching. He's on his own, fucking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
we had our issues back in the day.
I hold a grudge.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know.
Wouldn't, it would have been better if they got involved and if Randy went out to help them and went back, you know, and he was a little distracted. I don't know.
I can't even justify it.
It's all stupid.
if you stop the match right when he slides out the ring to beat them up and go, that's a pretty good match, actually. I was surprised. Like, I was genuinely surprised how much I enjoyed the match until the finish. But you know what? On a card, on a pay-per-view card, where there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5...
Six, seven matches. Five announced matches.
Well, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But you're watching seven matches. Then there's the pre-show match. So there's 8 matches. You know what I mean?
No. Pre-show is one of the 7.
No. Oh, sorry. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes, I'm sorry. 6 and 7 with the pre-show. And you have 2 matches where you have, well, you have 2 screw job finishes. One walkout countout finish, you know what I mean? And essentially, the women's title match had a distraction finish with Carmella coming out. The only match that had like a clean finish in the card besides the pre-show, because I didn't watch it, is the match that didn't need to happen at all, which was Fashion Police versus the Ascension.
Yeah. Now, did they really just waste the entire build of the Fashion Police to give a 2-minute squash match against the Ascension?
Pretty much, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Breezango has been one of the most amusing parts of SmackDown for the past at least month. Their segments are great. It's completely ridiculous, you know, and that's what makes it great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, who keeps attacking them? Who keeps doing this? And then, you know, they show the little video of the shadows.
Yeah, it's a two-minute blow-off.
I wonder who this could possibly be. Maybe it'll lead to something exciting. And then it's like, oh, well, that was certainly something.
Yeah. Well, it certainly wasn't.
You know, I saw a great tweet after that match that was like, you know, 2 years ago, this match would have been headlining an NXT pay-per-view.
Yes. Probably. Think about it. Like, look how good look how over the Ascension were in NXT.
Yeah.
Dominant they were as a tag team. And then, I don't get it. Whatever. Main event time. Men's Money in the Bank ladder match. So I have some bullet notes I want to just bring out here.
Okay.
Of things I saw. So, all right. So Corbin jumping Nakamura during his entrance was a good start because it builds kind of their feud they got going on. And it jumps Nakamura from behind. He takes a beating. It takes him out of the match for a little while. I didn't think it was going to take him out of the match for 30 minutes. That's quite the recovery he had to go through.
Well, I mean, his entrance was like 17 minutes walking down the ring.
Oh, once he came back out, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, no, he didn't do a big thing. He just power-walked. But still. Ziggler climbing up over Corbin was kind of cool and unique. I like that.
Yep.
The sunset flip powerbomb from Zayn to Ziggler off the top of the ladder was just brutally sick and awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that looked so painful.
One of my other favorite spots was when Owens just turned and kicked Zayn right in the dick.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. Whatever, you just classic Kevin Owens, if you will.
Yeah.
Styles hitting the DVD to Owens on that ladder that was bridged. Yep, that was good.
The Sami Zayn with the suplex on the outside.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was awesome. That half and half, yeah, that was pretty sick. Styles falling from the briefcase onto his face in the ring.
Oh yeah.
Jeez, you know what? Bro.
When he was holding on, I actually thought he was going to manage to unhook the briefcase.
Me too. I thought that would have been sweet.
Amazing.
Yes. Yes, I thought so as well.
The only part of that I wouldn't have liked is that they would have done it before Nakamura got into the match.
Right.
But that would have been an amazing finish.
When Nakamura got beat up and he didn't come out straight away, I knew he was going to return when Baron Corbin was about to
climb the ladder.
Yeah. I knew that was... And
that was also something I said to Paul.
Yeah, but the fact that Nakamura took a while to get to the ring... And then come running out, and they played his music, which I thought was hilarious. So it's just him running out, but still, that was pretty awesome. And then when he just went and kicked the crap out of everybody, and the crowd is singing his music the whole time. It's just like, oh, seriously, yeah. How? Just put the damn title on him. He is money, like money personified. He is going to make you money as champion. He is probably the most over guy in the company right now, practically. I mean, it's crazy. But I'll tell you what, dude, I was at work, and I just about lost my shit. When you had that Nakamura style stare down as they're looking through the ladder at each other, I had goosebumps.
When they started looking at each other,
oh man!
And they slowly pick up the ladder and move it to the side of the ring.
Yes, yes.
Oh, it was amazing.
That was. And then I thought for sure, like as they were like kind of squaring off, like they're gonna attack each other, I thought for sure everyone else was gonna run in the ring and stop them and prevent them from touching so they'd save that from them ever squaring off type of
thing.
No, my
goodness. Did they not tease the greatest feud with these two guys?
Oh, instead, they went at it. They went at
it. You know, that was, I don't know how long. It was maybe 3-4 minutes.
I don't know. It felt like an eternity of awesomeness, though.
They were going at each other as the hardest I've ever seen people in the WWE.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, oh, my goodness. That is your WrestleMania main event,
dude,
right there.
Oh, absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. I was so jacked up, dude. You don't understand. I was losing my freaking mind. And then when Corbin came in and cleared them both out so he could win, like, I was so tremendously disappointed because I was so emotionally wrapped up in watching the two of them fight. I was pissed that it was over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyways, go ahead.
Again, though, I think he's the right guy to put it on out of that group.
Oh, he'll just achieve that with what he achieved with the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal win.
I mean, but look, you're not going to give it to Nakamura or Styles or KO or Ziggler for some reason.
Well,
Sami Zayn was the only other person I thought it was between him and Corbin winning it.
I actually thought Kevin Owens would have been a good guy to win it because he's the arrogant prick that would do kind of like the Carmella thing. I thought Sami Zayn would be great because everyone would just wait for him to cash it in finally type of thing. Yeah. But Baron Corbin, I'm okay with it to an extent because I don't see him as champion. Like, I see him being a guy that tries to cash it in and loses.
See, I see him as being a a quick transition champion right now, where maybe, you know, at some pay-per-view, you know, say the Royal Rumble or Survivor Series or something, he comes out in the middle of the main event or right after the main event and cashes in, you know, wins the belt, and then at the following pay-per-view dropping it in like his first defense.
Okay. All right.
You know, something like that. But there's one other spot for that match that you didn't cover.
Oh, I wasn't. Hold on. Let me see if I. All right. I read them all that I wrote down.
AJ Styles doing the forearm off the ropes onto Ziggler.
Yes.
On the left.
Yes. That was
and
awesome.
The camera angle when they showed it from above. Oh, my goodness.
What's up?
It was fantastic. What's up, Ronnie?
Hey, Ronnie. Hey. Yeah, no, that was a pretty awesome spot. I agree with you 100% on that one, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the six people in that match really were, they're like easily the six best that are going right now.
Oh, no doubt, dude. No doubt. Absolutely. Like, there's no arguing there.
Yeah.
No arguing there whatsoever. So, Ronnie, we just finished talking about Money in the Bank, just so you know.
Okay.
Did you hear the rumor for Battleground in July? Next SmackDown pay-per-view? The potential main event match? Huh?
No.
Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal in a Punjabi prison match.
Oh. Well, it's exciting.
Got to keep them Singh brothers out of the ring.
I don't even let them be in the ring. They're no threat to anybody.
Isn't it ridiculous?
They're 4'6".
Isn't it ridiculous?
They could stand on each other's shoulders and they're still smaller than Randy Orton.
Allegedly bringing back the Punjabi prison match. It almost seems racist.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
yeah, I mean,
his whole gimmick is that, right?
He's Indian, yes.
Well, no, I meant like his whole gimmick is paying up to his heritage and whatnot, right?
Well, yeah, but there's being proud of your heritage, like Bret Hart was proud of being Canadian, but you didn't hear a Canuck prison match.
True.
Well, I mean, the Mountie did kind of try that with the Boss Man.
When they had to spend the night in jail. When I was a kid, I loved it when the Mountie was being processed, and the guards were like, "Give me your finger! Give me your finger!" And he's like, "You want the finger? There's the finger!" And he flipped him off because I was just like, "Oh, he gave him the finger!" Like, as a kid, I hadn't seen that in wrestling before. I got all excited. Who knew? You know, 9 years later, Steve Austin would make it his thing.
Right.
Anyways,
is it safe to say that this Punjabi prison match will be better than the other Punjabi prison matches?
Oh, you mean the one that didn't have any Indian in it at all when it was the Big Show against Undertaker? Yeah, probably.
Right.
Well, the next pay-per-view we're going to be treated to is from Dallas, Texas, July the 9th. WWE Great Balls of Fire. And so far, they got Brock Lesnar champion versus Samoa Joe, which I'm pretty excited about that match.
That has the potential to be a good match.
Yeah. And then an ambulance match with Braun against Roman Reigns, which, I don't know, I popped big when Braun popped out on Raw Monday night, and then...
He stood on the back and raised his arms and gone...
Well, that's what he does.
Then they showed that on the replay like 70 times.
Oh, okay, yeah, I could see how that would get annoying and get old.
What you're saying is Braun saved Raw.
Yeah, pretty much the rest of Raw was trash.
I don't know, I didn't watch all of Raw.
So. Oh my goodness. I watched all of Raw, okay?
Yeah.
And I have a big, huge freaking problem with Roman Reigns walking out and being like, "Hey, I'm challenging for the world title at SummerSlam." And they're like, "Okay, he will get a title match at SummerSlam." You're like, "What?"
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, that's all you got to do? That's all it takes?
Yeah, they've only had number one contender matches and all kinds of other stuff for, weeks to see who gets to face Brock Lesnar at Great Balls of Fire.
Right.
But he can just walk out and be like, "Yo, I'm going to have a belt.
It's my yard. And I'm the big dog." God, I hate him so much. I just hate him so much.
Maybe you guys already talked about it, but so he can do that, but AJ can't revoke his rematch for the belt?
No.
No, he cannot.
Not allowed, because Ginger and Randy Orton are having a thing.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, my son said, which I'm sure you guys already covered this, but my son said that AJ and Shinsuke Nux stole the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good.
They're like bit right there.
Yeah. What you need to do, Ronnie, I know you didn't get a chance to watch Money in the Bank yet. Put on Money in the Bank.
Yep.
Just fast forward to that last match.
Yep.
Okay.
And just watch that match, because nothing else in the card is worth spending the time. That match, it's about maybe 30 minutes, 35 minutes.
I was actually, that's the only match that, I mean, I love watching it, you know what I'm saying? Wrestling in general, but that was the only one that has me excited.
Yeah, every other match had some kind of screwball finish that you're just like, really? And then the next one would come, and you're like, "Oh my goodness, really?" And then the next one would come, and you're like, "Oh, come on with this already."
Yeah. We went over that, though, Ronnie. Go back and listen to the show.
I will. When it posts. I will. You guys have been great. You don't even need me.
Oh, no. We like having you around. So, I'm a big Matt Wrestling, British Wrestling fan, right? You guys know that. So, this past Sunday in Philadelphia at the Russell Factory, Chikara held the 2017, or the first ever inaugural, there we go, Johnny Kidd Invitational Tournament. Now, Johnny Kidd was a professional wrestler from England. He wrestled there for years in the UK. Phenomenal, like Matt Russell, just one of the best there has ever been, you know, right up there with Johnny Saint and Jim Briggs and, you know, Dynamite Kid, William Regal, Zack Sabre Jr., whatever, you know, all those guys like that. So they had this tournament, and it was hyped that it was going to be some of the, you know, eight of the best mat technicians, you know, in the world, blah, blah, blah. And then they announced the brackets. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see here. That match will kick butt. That guy's not very good. That guy's new. That guy's pretty awesome. All right, he can go too. That guy's overhyped. And that guy, all right, yeah, all right. So, and I'll explain those more now. So the first match on the card is Zack Sabre Jr. against Mike Quackenbush. That match alone made me go, I'm buying a month of Chikaratopia so I can watch this show. Because I want to see Zack and Quack too. Because they had one match against each other already that was spectacular. And this match was not good. Actually, the whole tournament was not good. Like I said,
really?
The opening match.
Last week you were so hyped for this.
I know I was. I know I was. And it was so disappointing when I finally sat down to watch it. Johnny, you know, like Zack Sabre Jr., Mike Quackenbush, they basically had like smiley, happy, you know, like they didn't wrestle.
Just, they're slapping each other for 5 minutes.
Well, no, but like they're like doing holds and holds and reversals and counters and this and that and smiling at each other and kind of being foolish and this and that and everything. And then they got serious for a minute. And it's just like, this is supposed to be like a quote unquote prestigious tournament. And like, you know, the whole thing felt like half speed. I mean, just like it was disappointing, you know, and like Sabre Jr. gets a fluke win. Like every match had a fluke. Every finish of the tournament was a fluke finish. It was like, oh, he caught him in a submission. Oh, he caught him in a roll up. You know what I mean? Unexpectedly. Like the matches just sort of ended. Like there was no big hype. There was no build. It was just like, you know, the matches didn't tell a story. It was just, I just expected so much more and got so little. The next match on the card was Rory Gulak, who's the, you know, his brother's Drew Gulak, and you guys are familiar with Drew from probably the 205 Live and the Cruiserweight Classic, right? And everything. Drew Gulak can wrestle. He's a good wrestler. Rory Gulak is not as good. And as a matter of fact, Rory Gulak is kind of not. I don't look at him and go, wow, he's a world-class wrestler. No, he looks like a 40-year-old man that doesn't go to the gym, even though he's 27, because he's balding. Jeez. And he's got horrible balding haircut, and he's got spaghetti arms and legs, and he's just not, he doesn't look believable. Like, doesn't look like he's a threat. And then he wrestled Travis Huckabee, who is kind of a new guy of the Russell Factory. He's got a wrestler's look to him of someone like from the British style. And I actually, the one time I've seen him live last March in Kennebunk, I was impressed, and I'm like, ooh, I'd like to see more of him. And Limitless is finally bringing him to Maine for some shows, and I'm looking forward to it. But Rory beat Travis in another match, friendly, like another match that were just a fluke all of a sudden ending. And I actually, like, that was the finish. Like, I had to go back and watch it to believe that I just saw the finish. Then the third match on the card was Matt Riddle against Halo Wicked. This would be the best match on the card, and it wasn't very good. And then the next match on the card, I mean, Matt Riddle, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a former UFC fighter that went to independent wrestling, and he's kind of making waves all across the country and the world, if you will, with his gimmick. I don't think you'll ever see him in WWE because I think he likes the Mayor Jay Wanna a little too much. But, you know, he's a great wrestler, very entertaining. I love watching him. He's great in the ring, and this was the best match on the card, him and Halo Wicked. But even then, like, it was like it was too short, and they tried to put in too much in too short of a period of time. That was the other thing. Every match was short, like 5 minutes or less. Maybe 6 minutes. So, like, you couldn't even really, like, to have a mat-based wrestling match like Johnny Kidd would have or Sabre Jr. or whatever, you need to go 20 minutes. Right. You know, you can't have a five-minute match because it takes time. When you have catch-as-catch-can, trading holds matches, you need 10, 15, 20 minutes to tell the story of the match and have a good match. And none of these matches had that. And then the final first-round match, this was probably the longest one. They probably went 7 or 8 minutes. It was the Chikara champion, Juan Francisco de Coronado, against James Mason. Now, James Mason is like a 24-year veteran of the of the mat game over in the UK. He actually competed in part of a team of the British team or Team UK in the TNA World Cup they did a few years back. He's been to the Maritimes quite a bit, Canada, whatnot. I feel like this might be like it's probably his Northeast independent debut, if you will. And he's a good hand in the ring. He's been around a long time. He's that traditional British-style wrestler. And him and Coronado had a decent match, but again, it had a fluke, quick roll-up finish. And then they had a Young Lions Cup match with the Hermit Crab against Silverhawk, and that went like 3 minutes, and Silverhawk lost, so we have a new champion. And then round two happened, and Rory Gulak somehow beat Zack Sabre Jr., submitting him with his finish on a fluke. Sabre Jr. went to do a roll-up and lean back into it, bridge back into it for extra leverage, and Gulak managed to grab him in like a dragon sleeper and it didn't even look like he had it sunk in, and Sabre tapped. And I was just like, all right, well, that was the shits. And then Coronado beat Matt Riddle, and I just went, are you friggin' kidding me? Like, come on. And then... And again, the match wasn't good. And then they had a singles match with two Australians, Mick Moretti against Jessica Troy. That was actually the second best match of the show, and it wasn't that good. And it went about 7-8 minutes. And then we had a tag team match, the Tempura Boys against the Cyberhawks 2000. That was okay. Decent tag match. Didn't go very long, maybe 5 minutes. And then the main event. And I'm watching it, and there's 4 minutes to go on the show, and they're still doing the ring introductions. And I'm thinking, huh, maybe they cut this off for some reason. Maybe the timer's messed up. I don't know. It was not. They rang the bell, and 40 seconds later, Rory Gulak submitted their champion. Yep. I don't even know if it went that long. I watched it. I couldn't believe it. I was so disappointed. Like, you have a card that it's 2 hours and 20 minutes long, it shows. However, 24 minutes of that was the 15-minute intermission they took, and the over 8 minutes at the beginning where it just had the logo saying, it's going to start soon. And that was over 8 minutes long before it actually started. Because it was like, all they did was take the live stream and just put it on there. You know what I mean? And then they had an intermission at the show, so they had an intermission at the during the stream, but they just put the logo up. And the intermission was just over 15 minutes. The beginning was over 8. So you have a show that's less than 2 hours long. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You have a 10-match show that's under 2 hours long with ring entrances and a small ceremony for Johnny Kidd. Everyone's ring entrance, say it takes 2 minutes. That's 20 minutes of ring entrances. Now you have an hour and 20-minute show. You know what I mean? And it just – hour and whatever, 30-minute show to have 10 matches. And that's, you know, that's 13 minutes a match. But they didn't go 13 minutes because you have the ring entrances too, exits as well. I mean, it was disappointing. Like, I was so disappointed. Like, like if I would have gone to Philadelphia to watch this, I would have been pissed.
And that's the thing. Philly's like,
do you think
they're a hostile crowd if they want to be?
And it was your typical Chikar crowd, and the crowd was into it, but it's almost like. It's almost like the Chicago crowd is into it because it's that they feel like it an ownership to it, so they're not going to boo no matter what, you know. And the Russell Factory is cool. It's like they've built their own studio to air. Like, they have an hour long show. It doesn't air weekly. It's like maybe a couple of times a month that they do live from the Russell Factory. They call it the Power Hour, so that's kind of cool. You know, so I mean, they're really building their own brand more than ever now with this Chikaratopia. But on the plus side, I am kind of excited about Chikaratopia because it's only $8, so I'm going to have it for a month. And I didn't realize what they had on there exactly. They have every Chikara show ever on Chikaratopia. And there's some stuff from when they first started out that I would love to watch, like some early stuff with Claudio Castagnoli, or like they have Joshi Mania Nights 1, 2, and 3 on there from 2011. I went to Night 2 and New York and just north of Boston. But nights one and two, nights one and three, I didn't go to. But I'm looking forward to watching those. I tweeted Bryce Remberg, who was the referee for Chikara. He refereed every match on that card, by the way. So he's the one that worked the most Sunday. And I was like, I have Chikaratopia now. What do you recommend as what you think is the top shows? And he said High Noon, which was their season finale of 2011, and King of Trios 2011.
Okay.
And funny enough, the Joshi Mania shows were in 2011. So I'll be checking out 2011. Oh, and I'm sorry, one more thing. There was no commentary to the show at all.
Really?
Yeah. I thought that was really odd that there was no commentary at all on the show.
Yeah.
So, there we go. Sorry, I just did all the talking for a few minutes there.
No, this is actually about that, though. Like, if it didn't have so many screwy finishes, would you have enjoyed it more?
No, the matches weren't good. Like, the matches just, like, they weren't enjoyable to watch. That was what was so disappointing about it. Like, you're looking at Zack Sabre Jr. against Mike Quackenbush. Two of the, like, arguably two of the greatest, like, Matt Russells in the world. I mean, one of the greatest matches I've ever seen live to this date involves Zack Sabre Jr. against Chris Hero. Another one of the greatest matches I've ever seen live was Mike Quackenbush against Reckless Youth, 2 out of 3 falls match back in 2003 at the Portland Expo. I mean, like, and Mike Quackenbush, you know, like, almost every match he's in is a great match. You know, like, he and Drew Gulak back in December, I think it was. They had a match, or might have been in November, but end of November. Or, no, it was definitely end of December. They had a match. They went 20 minutes. They put it on. They put it on their Facebook feed for free or whatever, like, live, and I watched it. And it was, like, Drew Gulak's last match in Chikara. And it was, like, an unadvertised match, dark match, whatever it is, on this show. And they went 20 minutes, and it was fantastic. I mean, you watch that, and you go, look how good Mike Quackenbush is. Look how good Drew Gulak is. And then when they're hyping, you know, like, the opening round match is Sabre Jr. against Quackenbush, I'm like, that should be the tournament finals. This shouldn't be the opening round match. And then it's just so unsatisfying. It wasn't even like I built the hype up my own mind and was let down. It was just... it was very unsatisfying. The whole show was. Like, I couldn't believe it.
That's disappointing.
It is disappointing. You know...
Because, like Aaron said earlier, you were, like, hyping it last week, so...
Yeah, I was excited about it. I couldn't believe it. Like, I'm like, I'm going to buy this. Like, I'm going to buy an iPay-per-view. You know? And I don't buy iPay-per-views. But I'm buying that one. Oh, hold on. Here we go. Per WWE SmackDown Live General Manager Daniel Bryan, Tamina, Natalya, Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, and Carmella will compete in a second Women's Money in the Bank ladder match next week live on SmackDown.
Oh, thank goodness.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because the first time ever when they did it on pay-per-view, they tarnished it. So it doesn't matter. And if Carmella wins again, then it's going to be completely redundant.
No, you know what? They should have a second briefcase. So now you have Carmella with a briefcase and somebody else could win a briefcase.
Yeah.
And then it's just craziness.
And it's Carmella with the asterisk briefcase. Like they did back in the old days, like the million-dollar belt, you know, as the belt or whatever. Not the million-dollar belt, because that's a bad example, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, Carmella's briefcase says she can go against the Universal Champion, so it's going to be Carmella versus Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series.
There is something I'm excited about this week, though.
What's that?
It is Cassius Ohno versus Aleister Black on NXT, even though we've seen that before.
Yeah. I've seen Tommy End against Chris Hero before, so, I mean, the potential there is pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
But after the Johnny Kidd Invitational Tournament, I'm not going to get my hopes up.
Yeah, true. But, like, everybody's, like, what I've read on social media is, like, this ought to be great, not knowing that they have wrestled before as Chris Hero and Tommy End.
Mm. And also that the match was recorded like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and everything I've heard about it is the fact
that
it's pretty damn good. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool that it's cool and I'm looking forward to it, but at the same time, I thought maybe they should held off on this one because, you know, once Bobby Roode goes up, you know, or whatever, then that could be a main event at a takeover.
Well, yeah, you could still do that.
You could still do it because I understand what you're saying, Ronnie. I do, but I think NXT does a great job in, like, they'll have this match and it'll just make you want to see another match. You know what I mean? It'll make you want to see the return match. Because there's a lot of fans out there that have never seen these two guys wrestle against each other.
Mm. Right, right.
Just like Nakamura and AJ Styles. Like,
which is a shame.
Right. I mean, like, their match at Wrestle Kingdom in 2016 was really awesome. So.
I believe you mean phenomenal.
It was phenomenal. It was pretty... pretty damn. Although Okada and Kenny Omega have just killed it twice this year, and Kushida and Will Ospreay in the Super Junior Tournament Finals, that was pretty phenomenal itself.
Omega and them round two was phenomenal, and it was a different style of match altogether. So you got the feeling like all over again almost.
No, you're absolutely right. Omega and Okada, too. First, they went the 60-minute time limit draw, which you never see those anymore. So that's awesome in itself. And you're right. It was a completely different style of match, but they still told a phenomenal story. One of my favorite spots in the whole match was the timing was just unbelievable, but it was such a simple move. Okada had Omega set up to do the flip out for his Rainmaker clothesline. And when he spun Omega out and he went to hit the clothesline, Omega just fell down. Like, right. He just fell forward on his face. But in doing so, like, Okada missed the big clothesline and, like, kind of threw himself halfway across the ring from the momentum of throwing his arm for the clothesline. And the timing was just so perfect on it, but it just told just a great story of how drained Omega was and how worn out he was and... you know, he just collapsed and it just, I don't know, I loved it. And it tells you how hard Okada was swinging for that clothesline, how much force he had behind it, that it carried him across the ring when there was nothing there to stop his momentum and everything. So,
just think, like 2 years from now, they'll both be in WWE pay-per-views having 4-minute matches that are like comedy related.
Probably. Thanks.
And their
Aaron.
Biggest thing will be on Talk is Jericho Talking Shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good Lord. So, this Friday night, Lowell, Massachusetts, I'm going to Best in the World, Ring of Honor pay-per-view.
Nice.
I talked about it last week.
And I'm still mad I can't go.
But yeah, like you're saying, Ronnie, Cody Rhodes, Christopher Daniels, World's Championship, and I think we're going to see new champion.
And that'd be awesome. The match itself should be awesome, but seeing the belt switch hands and
seeing Cody Rhodes win his first world championship. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Anyhow.
That's on that card too.
Say again, you cut out.
Oh, there's a lot of matches that are exciting.
Yes, it's a very stacked card. The whole card is pretty awesome. Yeah, the whole card is pretty damn awesome. I mean, everything from, you know, Kushida against Marty Scurll for the belt, to the Dalton Castle and the boys against Bully Ray and the Briscoes, War Machine against Young Bucks, the strap match between Hangman Page and Frankie Kazarian. Jay Lethal against Silas Young. I mean, no, it's a stacked night of wrestling. It's gonna be great.
Yeah.
It's gonna be great. So, I would love to chat about the new WWE unreleased DVD that's coming out this September.
Yeah, heck yeah.
never-before-seen matches from 1986 to 1995. And have you guys taken the time to look over this list at all?
I sure did.
Ronnie?
I have not.
Okay, all right.
So, I mean, I know some of the matches that are on there, but I haven't seen the full roster. Well,
it says there's 45 matches. Plus, there looks to be, like, little talking segments here and there and everything. And, like, it's pretty
cool. I think it's three DVDs.
It's a three DVD set, yeah. But you know what I've noticed? There's no Blu-ray advertisement at all.
Well, I mean, I'm sure.
Which is there will be. Well, no, I actually read a thing a month or so back from Wrestling DVD Network, and they were talking about how WWE looks to be getting out of the Blu-ray division, which seems weird, because, you know, Blu-ray is... I think we just lost Ronnie. Yeah, we did. Because Blu-ray is, you know, it's high definition.
Right.
But then again, none of these matches were shot in high definition, so what's it matter?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's true.
You know, these were all shot before they went to high def, so... But I hope they don't stretch it on the screen.
They were probably all shot on film.
Right, yeah, but they were probably also fought in the 4:3 form, shot in the 4:3 format.
Right.
You know, like the old... So I hope they just put bars on the side. I hope they don't stretch the picture on the screen.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so... Real quick, I mean, most of these matches are either pay-per-view rematches as we go later in the cut.
Yeah, or like warm-ups.
Or warm-up matches or whatever. But, like, I have a hard time finding a match on here that I'm going, like, oh, whatever. I mean, just starting with Big John Studd, King Kong Bundy, and Bobby the Brain Heenan against the Machines. Big Machine, Super Machine, and Hulk Hogan Machine.
Mm-hmm.
From Baltimore in 86. And then Macho Man Randy Savage against Paige Morales. Also in 86. Is that supposed to be Savage's debut in the Fed, I wonder? Debut match? I didn't look it up, but I feel like it is.
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
Sounds like it. I mean, the 86... No, because he had a match at WrestleMania 2. So it couldn't have been. Because he had a match at WrestleMania 2 where he defended the IC title. So he was the IC champ at this point. But anyway, so I'm curious. I don't care why it's on there. It's Paige Morales, you know, still in his kind of in his prime before they made him a job guy. December 86, Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper against Paul Orndorff and Harley Race. That just sounds awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if there's any of these you want to expand on, please do.
Sure.
The Dingo Warrior against Jose Estrada from June of 87. So that would be the Ultimate Warrior's debut, I'm assuming. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see. And then, you know, I don't remember this happening on TV, but obviously, you know the feud. Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage against the Honky Tonk Man and the Hart Foundation in a handicap match from January of 88.
Yeah.
So Hogan's still champ. It's before WrestleMania. It's right after the Macho Man face turn. But we never saw this match on TV anywhere, did we?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah. A very young Owen Hart against Barry Horowitz from March 1988.
Yeah, that I'm looking forward to a lot.
Yeah. This WWE Championship match, Randy Savage against Andre from the house show April of 88. I think I've seen a couple of those already. I think if you even go on the network, they have one from Madison Square Garden or something like that, so whatever. Okay. The Powers of Pain against the Demolition. The tag team title match, that should be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a hard-hitting match.
Yes. Yes, it is. This is one match that I'm very excited about. April 4th, 1989, Glens Falls, New York. Andre the Giant versus Big John Studd.
Oh, yeah. And from the stories that you're hearing now about how Andre did not like other big guys.
Yes.
I'm really interested to see, to really watch the match and see if you could see anything going on in there.
Well, see, Studd and Andre, they had matches. Like, I remember Coliseum Home Video steel cage match.
Right.
You had the WrestleMania 1 body slam match. You had some tag team matches. You know what I mean? On and on and on, where you had Andre against Studd, when Andre was the babyface and Studd was the heel. And then when Andre turned heel and then John Studd came back, they never had a match on TV. You had the Saturday night's main event where Big John Studd came down and made the save and Andre was on the outside of the ring. Because I remember the visual of, like, Bobby Heenan looking up, seeing John Studd come out and being shocked. Right. You have the Royal Rumble match that neither one of them were in at the same time. And then the only interaction you saw between the two of them was at WrestleMania 5, when it was supposed to be Andre against Jake Roberts, and Big John Studd was a special guest referee. And during Roberts' ring entrance, Andre attacked Big John Studd from behind and started choking him with the strap on his singlet.
Right.
And the match basically got thrown out and never happened. So I'm really excited to see these two guys in the ring where Andre's the heel and Studd's the babyface, just to see what happens.
Hmm. Yeah.
So that was one of the matches that stood out. That was like, ooh, that's awesome. That same night, Macho Man Randy Savage against the Ultimate Warrior.
See, that one I'm very curious to see, because this is like 2 full years before their, you know, retirement match at WrestleMania 7.
Yep.
So, you know, I'd like to see WrestleMania 5 era Macho Man go against the Warrior.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like to see how different it is.
You know, I mean, I'm sure the Warrior is still probably a mess, but Macho Man always had good matches.
Yep.
You know, I think their match at WrestleMania 7 was one of my favorite on the card. But I think the match itself was probably the best I've seen the Warrior have. Maybe their SummerSlam match.
You know, I would agree with that, but actually, think about this. Warrior and Hogan really wasn't bad.
No, it wasn't bad. But
yeah, Warrior vs. Hogan was a good match in itself.
If you watch back, though,
yeah.
How much of the Warrior-Hogan match was like a test of strength?
Fair enough.
You know?
No, you're absolutely right, actually. Not to say actually like you're not normally right, but... It's like people go, well, I'm not going to lie. I really didn't like it. Well, why would you lie about it? I hope you don't lie. Tell me the truth. Okay, so I'm actually kind of... Okay, June 6, 1989, Madison, Wisconsin, Dusty Rhodes... The American Dream versus the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. I saw that exact match 2 days prior, June 4th, 1989, in Portland, Maine. Mm. My first ever WWE show, so I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
July from 1989, Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Hillbilly Jim against Haku and Andre the Giant.
Okay, here's the first match where I don't think I care.
I'll still watch it because I want to see the team of Billy Jim and Jim Duggan.
Bobby Heenan's guys. I would watch Haku and Andre together.
This is really one of the first like mat collections where I'm going to sit down and watch every match from like I'm just going to watch beginning to end. I'm not going to jump around at all. Like some of the other compilations they've put out in the past that I've bought, I have skipped matches here and there, but there's really not a single match on this DVD that I don't want to watch. Moving on, still in 1989, Bryan Adams, which they felt a need to put Crush in here, like we didn't know who it was, but okay, versus Barry Horowitz.
I mean, was he Crush at that time? I don't think
so,
right?
No, he was not Crush at that time. He would just would have been Bryan Adams. Earthquake Evans against Paul Roma. Now, I'm sorry, I didn't look it up. Is that Earthquake?
Should be, right?
Or is this Paul Roma's debut against some jobber named Earthquake Evans?
To be honest, I don't know.
I'm going to have to do a quick search right now. Would you think I would have done this before? But I didn't. So you get to hear me do my search live.
Yeah, Earthquake Evans is John Tenta.
John Tenta, yeah. Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
The Rockers versus the Powers of Pain from January 1990. I feel like that's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Powers of Pain were okay.
Yep.
You know, they were big guys who did a lot of power stuff. They didn't move too fast, but I think seeing the Rockers against that is going to be really good.
I'm just excited to see all these house show matches. I'm really curious who's going to be doing commentary for the matches. Like, are we going to get, like, Gorilla Monsoon? And you know what I mean? Like, who's going to be doing the commentary, I guess? Because, like...
Michael Cole went in and redubbed.
Oh, Jesus H. Christ. If that's the truth, I'm going to watch it on mute.
Well, I mean, because house shows, who's going to do commentary on house shows?
But the thing is, were these house shows or were these TV tapings and they just never aired these matches, or they were dark matches on the TV tapings or something. You know, there's really an easy way to find that out. Just go to the history of WWE.com and look up one of the shows. So, like, for instance, they have two matches on here from January 23rd, 1990 in Fort Myers, Florida. The first being Andre the Giant and Haku against Demolition for the tag team titles.
Right.
And then the second being the Ultimate Warrior against Macho King Randy Savage for the WWE Intercontinental Championship. So we're getting two Macho Man and Ultimate Warrior matches on this.
Yeah, and this one was right before WrestleMania 6.
Yeah.
So, interesting. Yeah. You know what? You never really thought that the two of them fought much before their big feud.
Think about this. Like, I just most recently was doing some research on ladder matches in the WWE, house show ladder matches, because of this DVD, which we'll get to later. There's a couple ladder matches on there that I had never heard of. And Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels leading up to WrestleMania 10 probably had 20 plus ladder matches at house shows from January of that year going forward.
I mean, it makes sense, because that was really like the first big one.
Yeah.
But I mean, they got to get used to working with it and everything, right?
Right, right, right. But it's just like, holy crap, you know? Like, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Let's see here. January 21st was the Royal Rumble. January 22nd, they did a big TV taping in Miami. And January 23rd, Wrestling Challenge taping, Primetime Wrestling taping. Let's see here. Wow, that was a huge TV taping, so I bet you these were dark matches.
Right.
I bet you these were dark matches on it. I don't want to read the results, so I'm going to get away from there. But I'm just curious who we're going to get. Like, I bet you we'll get some Gorilla Monsoon. We'll probably get some Tony Schiavone. We'll get some Bobby the Brain Heaton, Jesse Ventura, I bet. I don't know. I'll be interested to see. Or maybe we'll get no commentary whatsoever. Who knows?
Cole.
So that wraps up disc one. Disc two, it's not going to be Michael Cole, jerk face. We get Hulk Hogan against Earthquake from Syracuse, New York, April 3rd, 1990. Also that night, Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase against the Big Boss Man. And then this actually, I think, is kind of interesting. From August of 1990 in Providence, Rhode Island, we get Mr. Perfect and Ravishing Rick Rude against the Ultimate Warrior and the Texas Tornado.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I think I said this before. Kerry Von Erich was one of my favorites back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I... You know, this is probably leading up that would be leading up to, I guess, maybe the Survivor Series.
This when is August,
Perfect's team was against the Warriors team, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe this was kind of leading the way, you know, building towards that.
Yep.
So that that sounds like a really good match.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think it does. Fort Wayne, Indiana, October 30th, 1990, the Legion of Doom versus Demolition.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm curious if that was their first ever encounter. That'd be pretty cool if it was.
Yeah.
And then January 8th, 1991, War Eagle, Tatanka.
Is that Tatanka? Yeah.
Yep, versus Dale Wolf.
Meh.
And now here's another one that kind of surprised me. Blindfold match. Rick Martel versus Jake Roberts, January 29th, 1991, in Savannah, Georgia.
So I guess that was before he sprayed him in the eyes.
It's got to be around that time. I mean, I don't. I think he sprayed. Right? I don't know, but I mean, they had
it was, big that match. Was WrestleMania 7, which is 91, yep. Right?
Yeah. But Jake was out quite a while before that happened. But I don't know. I'm just surprised they would rehearse a blindfold match on a house show. But
huh.
Fair. And I wonder if this will tarnish. I mean, as far as blindfold matches go, you're probably not going to do much better at all than that WrestleMania match. I mean, It was pretty awesome the way they did that.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Sid Justice versus the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, Calgary, Alberta, Canada, July 8th, 1991. I probably don't care much about this one. And then a casket match, the Ultimate Warrior versus the Undertaker.
You know what? That could be really good.
It could be.
That was... Didn't they have the casket match at SummerSlam? No, it wouldn't have been SummerSlam.
No, I don't know when they had their casket match.
They had the feud.
Did they have a casket match?
Didn't they? Because weren't they
locked
that? Jake Roberts was poisoning him.
They locked him in a casket.
Yeah, they didn't have a match. Because it would be weird to do like a casket match at a house show if you weren't building to something.
Well, I feel like
unless it's on a taping.
I feel like Warrior got fired before the match happened, type of thing.
Hmm. Maybe.
You know, like they had a body bag match.
That, you know what? I think that's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, I don't think they ever actually had a casket match. They had a body bag match. They had a match apparently at SummerSlam 92. But I don't think they ever actually had a casket match against each other. I think probably the program finished first or whatever. I do remember the body bag match, though.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Ric Flair versus Roddy Piper, October 1st, 1991. So one of Flair's first matches.
Oh, that's got to be a great match.
I feel like it's got to be. I mean, both guys were, you know. Okay, so this one, I don't remember this at all. And they even have a segment called Who is Mr. Madness? And it's Jake the Snake Roberts versus Mr. Madness from Springfield, Mass., November 1991. And it says Macho Man Randy Savage.
I'm guessing he was in a mask?
I don't remember any time when the Macho Man was under a mask for any reason in 91.
Was that... No, that wouldn't have been when the Cobra had eaten his arm.
Because, I don't know.
Because he retired at WrestleMania that year. And at SummerSlam that year was when he got married. And I don't remember him wrestling later that year. I thought he came back the year after, but I mean, obviously I'm wrong because here he is in the fall. Huh.
Yeah, I don't know. There's like a promo video online, apparently, that you can watch, which it's The Undertaker and Jake Roberts with Paul Bearer, and I guess they're wrestling Mr. Madness and Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about that, because I don't ever remember there being, like, a Mr. Madness gimmick in the WWE.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Checking his Wikipedia now, and there is an entry for Mr. Madness in his Wikipedia. That's it. Huh. It doesn't talk about it all, it just says Mr. Madness. But anyways, so that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Alright, so here we go. Springfield, Mass., November 12th, that same night, WWF Championship, Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair. Why WWE put them against each other on house shows and never on a pay-per-view, I'll never get it.
Yeah,
the timing wasn't right. They tell him, fuck you, the timing wasn't right. Piper's Pit with a Brooklyn Brawler. Bret the Hitman Hart versus the British Bulldog, June 30th, 1992, Binghamton, New York. So, you know, a couple months prior to their famous SummerSlam match.
Yeah.
Bret the Hitman Hart and the Ultimate Warrior against Papa Shango and Kamala. The Undertaker against Bam Bam Bigelow. I'm actually interested to see that.
Oh, absolutely. Bam Bam is so underrated.
Massively underrated. Massively, massively underrated. This next match I'm so excited is on here from Augusta, Georgia, March 9th, 1993. The Toxic Turtles against Tommy Stevenson and Ron Preston. That's right, Timmy and Tommy Turtle. I think one of those guys was George South.
I don't remember.
Oh, dude, it's when they were trying to... Like, they were the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, oh, no, that I remember.
Yeah, I think one of them was George South. Disc 3, The Undertaker against Giant Gonzalez house show, so I'm actually excited to see that after hearing the...
Something to Wrestle With.
Something to Wrestle With, where they talked about how much The Undertaker hated working with the Giant Gonzalez. The only match I remember them seeing have each other on TV was the WrestleMania match, other than, like, run-ins or whatever.
Right.
So I'm pretty excited about that. Kip Winchester and Brett Colt, the Smoking Guns, versus Barry Horowitz and Reno Riggins.
Man, Barry Horowitz is all over this set.
He was the guy that it's like him and the Brooklyn Brawler, Steve Lombardi. You know, those were when they brought new people in. That's who they put him against to see how they could do because they trusted them in the ring. You know, but yeah, this is practically a Barry Horowitz appreciation set.
Yeah, I mean that's got to be. This is at least the third match he's been on.
Oh yeah, yeah. Intercontinental Championship match, Shawn Michaels versus Mr. Perfect. I hope this is better than their WrestleMania match. Because I think the WrestleMania was the first time they ever wrestled each other, so I'm hoping that this match makes up for that. Okay, I'm excited about this one because it's in my home state, Portland, Maine. May 5th, 1993, the Taz Maniac versus Skippy Taylor, a.k.a. Scotty Too Hotty.
Why do I not remember the Taz Maniac?
Taz?
For obvious reasons. I don't remember him being the Taz Maniac.
I remember him being the Taz Maniac in the Svoldi's promotion, ICW. I remember being the Taz Maniac in ECW. But I never knew he had a tryout match with WWE. So that same night, Bret Hitman Hart against Yokozuna. I care so little about this match, but whatever. Hulk Hogan and Brutus the fucking Barber Beefcake against Money Inc. Guest referee Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
Yep. Lex Luger.
Didn't they have a bad WrestleMania match?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. So no, thank you.
I'm sure it's not going to be made better by Slaughter, but whatever. Burlington, Vermont. Lex Luger versus Ludwig Borga from '93.
Interesting.
Yep. February 1st, 1994, Macho Man Randy Savage versus Crush. Now, if I'm not mistaken, is this not prior to their what they would now call a Last Man Standing match that they had at WrestleMania? Or is this after?
Because February would have been before, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I'm actually pretty excited about this next match. From Montreal, Quebec, Canada, October 21st, 1994, the WWE Championship, Bret the Hitman Hart versus Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Oh, yeah. This was one of the matches when I was just first glancing at the thing, and I was like, oh my goodness, I need to see this match.
Absolutely, because for whatever reason, these two guys somehow never faced each other previously, and, or at least not that I'm aware of, in a one-on-one match?
Like, yeah, not that I can think of.
Yeah, exactly, so... And this is like, when Bret's champion. I mean, yeah, so this is pretty cool.
I was never a big fan of Jim Neidhart. I mean, he served his purpose in the Hart Foundation, and I got that.
Yep.
But I always like the, you know, they've known each other for so long that he's basically inside his head kind of matches.
Yes.
So I think that would probably be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I don't see how this could be bad at all. Well, I mean, obviously it could be, but I feel like this would be a good match. And then this is what I meant earlier, two ladder matches for the Intercontinental Championship. The first, May 16th, 1995, Jeff Jarrett against the British Bulldog.
Interesting.
Never knew Jarrett had ladder matches in WWE. The next one, Jeff Jarrett against Razor Ramon from June 5th, 1995 in Struthers, Ohio. So those are kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels and Bret the Hitman Hart versus Jerry the King Lawler and Hakushi.
This was the other match.
Yep, July 26, 1995, yeah.
I think when I looked at the list, I messaged you. I was like, when did Bret Hart and HBK tag together?
Never that I've ever been aware of.
And how awesome is it that Hakushi is in the match because he's awesome?
Yeah, Hakushi is one of those underrated guys who was really good. I remember at In Your House, one of the early In Your Houses, Hakushi and Bret Hart had a great match against each other.
Yep.
So, this should be actually pretty damn cool. And we might even get to see a pile driver out of Jerry the King Lawler because that's back when they let him do that.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, this is the last match on the card, which is Steel Cage, the WWE Championship, Diesel versus Yoko.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is, hopefully I can find it on the site. I should have looked it up earlier, but I don't know. There's another listing of matches. And essentially, it says were 13 extra matches just added to the WWE unreleased DVD content listing. And basically what it says is here is last week we received and posted the full list of content WWE has in works for the unreleased DVD, which we now know will be filled with 45 exclusive matches. As news spread online, our listing was spotted on a few other websites with several extra matches, including one on PW Insider, which is usually a pretty reliable website. That's me saying that. And it had 13 more matches listed. And right now, they have not been able to confirm that these are not present, other than the fact that they are not present on the list that they had. But these maybe are Blu-ray extras that they haven't released or talked about. I don't know. But okay. I'd like to just talk about these real quick, because these are all, like, I don't know. I think I would be pretty excited if these were on here. Going all the way back to 1988, Hulk Hogan and Bam Bam Bigelow against Andre the Giant and Ted DiBiase at a house show in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Interesting.
And then in 1989, October 2nd, Steel Cage, Randy Savage against Hulk Hogan.
Awesome.
And I don't know if that'd be Big Blue or Steel Nash or whatever it is, but it's a house show steel cage match, so it's got to be Big Blue. It's got to be great.
Yeah.
June 10th, 1990, Rick Rude versus the Ultimate Warrior.
Okay.
June 1st, 1992, Papa Shango versus the Ultimate Warrior.
You know what? They had a decent feud.
They did. July 20th, 1992, apparently this is the Ultimate Warrior Appreciation Day, Kamala and Papa Shango versus Undertaker and the Ultimate Warrior. That's a very unique mix of four supernatural eccentric guys, you know?
Yeah.
From Worcester, Mass.
One of them who's amazing and three who are... Yeah.
Yep, pretty much. September 1st, 92, Kamala versus the Ultimate Warrior.
Jeez.
October 27th, 92, Ultimate Warrior versus Papa Shango. So,
are you Papa sure this Shango isn't like a bonus disc to go on an Ultimate Warrior collection?
I don't know, right? April 5th, 93, The Mad Monk, a.k.a. Friar Ferguson, Bastion Booger, you know, Mike Shaw, against Bobby Young. The Harris Twins versus Dale Wolf and Tim Patterson from April 5th, 1993. You know, eventually they would join the Disciples of Apocalypse or whatever.
Right.
But, yeah. And then Phoenix, Arizona, April 5th, 93, Shawn Michaels versus Mr. Perfect.
Okay.
Portland, Maine, May 5th, 93, the Harlem Knights, a.k.a. Men on a Mission, versus Mike Bell and Tony DeVito. June 6th, 1995, Shawn Michaels versus Jerry Lawler. And then July 26th, 95, Fantasio versus Rad Radford. So, you know, like they said here, maybe these are penciled in for a Blu-ray extras.
Right.
Or maybe it was something that was planned earlier. Who knows? But they're saying these are unconfirmed. So, it'd be interesting. Either way, it's a set I'm buying.
Yeah. So. Now, that, when was the Fantasio match?
The Fantasio match. July 26, 1995, in Ronnie's home area of St. Louis, Missouri.
So he had a second match.
Oh, yeah, he had more than one.
Right, because he had that one on Superstars like early July.
Yeah, he had a couple matches. He had some house show matches, that one TV match, but that's about it. July 4th here, just in a few weeks, the Fight Owens Fight Kevin Owens Story DVD and Blu-ray is coming out. I'm picking that up.
I can see that.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely be picking that up. And August 1st, the Kurt Angle Essential Collection's coming out. I don't know if I'm going to pick that up or not. If it's just a match listing, probably not. And then September 5th is this unreleased set we were just talking about. So, yeah. Yeah. So that unreleased set looks pretty damn fun.
Yeah, it does look like a lot of fun.
Looks pretty good. Anyhow, so anything else you'd like to chat about?
No, there's nothing I can think of. Other than how much Ronnie's internet is terrible.
Yeah, I know. He was already, like, cutting out, and then he was just gone. And we just went on, you know, like a We didn't even skip a beat.
Yeah, well, you know, we're fucking professionals.
Pretty much. That's what it comes down to. Yeah. Anyhow, so are you actually going to watch SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, I don't know, like an hour in.
Oh, you're watching it while we chat?
Yeah, no, I was watching before we chatted. I've watched the first hour of the show. I got up to...
Oh, so you saw that the rematch for the ladder match announced?
Oh, no, that was not announced yet.
Okay.
Even though Daniel Bryan said the first thing he's doing on SmackDown is he's addressing that. He was in, like, a couple quick little backstage segments.
Okay.
That's about it.
All right, well, there we go then. Yeah. So... Oh, yeah, Naomi is going to give Lana a shot next week at her title because she's a fighting champion, and she didn't like – she doesn't want anyone to say that it was only the Carmella's distraction that allowed her to win the match. I guess she should have cashed in that Money in the Bank last night, huh?
So my guess is Carmella is going to come and distract her again?
Probably. Dude, friggin', they have Shinsuke Nakamura against Dolph Ziggler again.
It was better.
Yeah, cool. I'll check it out.
My issue with SmackDown that I have so far is, do you care if I tell you what matches? Oh, you're reading what matches are.
Yeah,
right?
I'm reading it right now.
Oh, okay. They had Big E against one of the shit twins, and that match when it goes to commercial, they show it during the commercial. Dolph Ziggler and Shinsuke Nakamura. It goes to commercial, and they don't fucking show it during the commercial.
Why not? Why the match you want to see?
I don't know.
Maybe it's because the Nakamura against Ziggler match went like 16 minutes, and the Big E match went like 5. So, you know, they figure if you cut to commercial, this match is going to be going on for another 8 minutes when we come back, you know. So maybe that's
but still, the process behind it. If they're showing stuff during commercials, why wouldn't you show stuff that people want to see?
No, I agree with you. I'm just trying to think, you know, maybe that's what their logic is. I didn't say I liked it, but...
Yeah.
Kevin Owens opens an open challenge?
Yeah, that's the part I just got up to.
Okay, I won't tell you then.
Good, yeah. As you called me to make this, to record this, he was about to walk to the ring.
Well, there we go. Yeah. So, yeah. You'll see in a second. What'd you think of Big Cass turning on Enzo last night?
Why? I mean, do they have nothing for Enzo to do? Because you know as soon as he loses the matches to Big Cass, he's not going to ever be anywhere again.
Yeah. Apparently they don't have anything for Enzo to do. Set him down to 205 live. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. You know, but it doesn't make sense. Like, why are you splitting them up so soon?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I get that they think Big Cass is going to be a huge star.
And I think he will be too, but why are they turning him heel? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, if you have Enzo the one that's doing... If Enzo's jumping Cass, if Enzo's getting Big Show to be the, you know, to help him up, help him or whatever, you know, if Enzo's being the, you know, the little bully... Because he's tired of living in Cass's shadow or whatever, on and on and on. Or, you know, Cass is, like, looking out for him and he's like, I don't need you and this and that. It makes more sense. Why are you making Cass the baby, you know, the heel in this? Why is not, you know, Cass should be the baby face?
Yeah.
Oh, you know why they're building Cass up? So that way they can have someone else to throw at Roman Reigns. You know, with Reigns as the big bad baby face.
Or at Strowman because he's almost as big.
And Strowman's basically a babyface because he beats up Roman Reigns. No one likes Roman Reigns.
That's the thing. Like, everyone on Raw seems to be a babyface except for The Miz and Samoa Joe, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So maybe that's why they have Cass as a heel?
Roman Reigns is supposed to be a babyface.
Right, but I mean, he gets booed like Cena gets booed. So it doesn't matter what he is.
No, that's not the same. Cena gets booed because it's cool to boo Cena. People boo Roman Reigns because they just fucking hate him.
Right.
And probably some people do hate Cena. I don't know. What do you think about him being a free agent who can jump from show to show, huh? Way to spread him around.
Yeah, no, that's some serious bullshit.
Yeah, I think so. Recently,
you know, if they're going to do that, you may as well get rid of the fucking Universal Championship that hasn't shown up on TV and just have one world champion that goes between the two shows.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. Crap. I had something to say, now I've lost it.
So. John Cena being a free agent.
No. Oh, Daniel Bryan recently did an interview with Sports Illustrated, and he talked about his returning to the ring in it. And basically what he said is that wrestling is where he is a creative person. Wrestling is where he expresses creativity, and it's hard for him because he hasn't found anything to replace his love and passion for that.
Not
his wife
being
and kid.
Alive.
not his wife and kid. Well, according to him, his doctors say he's okay to wrestle again. It's the WWE doctors that say no. So basically, he's biding his time for his contract to expire, and then I guarantee you he's going to Japan. He's going back to Ring of Honor. I don't know if we'll see him on the independent straight away. He could have a very high price tag, but I guarantee he's going to Japan. He's going to be in New Japan Pro Wrestling. No doubt about it. He's going to be on Ring of Honor, I bet.
You know what? I feel for him. And as much as I want to see him back in the ring,
yeah,
I think the WWE is doing the right thing.
See, I don't know. I don't know if they are. I don't know if the WWE is just doing a big CYA thing because they don't want a lawsuit on their hands, or they don't want anything else because they're a publicly traded company and they're so prominent.
That's the thing. Look at what's happening with football in the NFL.
Yeah.
Look at what's happening with like all the other former wrestlers that are trying to get together and sue.
Yeah, but none of them have any legs to stand on in court.
But
every one of them lose.
He has documented concussion issues.
Yep.
Information is coming out now about how bad that is for you.
Right.
You know, it's not like he's had one concussion in a 30-year career.
Right.
And they're being like a little cautious. He's had many of them. He's even admitted, he's like, I have no idea how many I've had. You know, I'm sure I've had some that I just worked through.
Right.
You know, and right now with everything going on, WWE, it can't have him in the ring.
No, and I agree with it, and I understand, but like that's why I'm saying like I
you know,
get WWE's
and wherever
doing a big CYA
goes,
type of thing.
Wherever he ends up, that is going to be a heck of a lot of insurance money.
You think so?
I think so. That, I mean, it's New Japan's got the money for it. I think that is probably why he wouldn't do a lot of independence.
Yes.
Because there's no way they could afford it.
I mean, that, you know? And that's the thing, is I don't see him going on the independent scene. I don't see him taking a booking, you know, at little...
You don't see him in PWG?
Well, possibly. I feel like PWG would be the exception.
Hmm.
I don't see him taking a show in, like, Maine.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't care how big Limitless is. I don't think we're going to see Daniel Bryan in Limitless Wrestling. I mean, we did see Cody Rhodes, but I think for Daniel Bryan, if he's wrestling a certain style or he's being a certain way, I don't see him taking those type of smaller independent bookings.
Right.
I can see him doing PWG because it's one of the larger promotions. I can see him doing like Rev Pro in the UK or Progress. Definitely see him doing New Japan. Definitely see him doing Ring of Honor. I don't see him going to TNA. Whew, that would be a coup for them, though. Even if he just showed up for one match, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah. I can understand why he wants to get back in the ring. And, obviously, this time away of him just sitting home and healing and resting and exercising, I guess, is beneficial to him.
Right.
In the long run, I mean, look at Shawn Michaels back.
All it takes is one awkward fall.
No, I get it. I get it.
You know, could you imagine he goes to TNA? They're super excited, and he has a match against Alberto Del Douchebag, who stiff kicks him in the face once and ends his career.
Yep. No, so. I get it. I get it. Hey, don't forget this Friday, Glow is released on Netflix.
Yep. I am very excited about that.
Cool.
The one consolation to me not being able to go up to see the show with you guys.
Is you going to sit home and watch Glow?
Is that once my kids go to bed and my wife is still at her school's graduation, I will be sitting and watching Glow.
That sucks. It really does suck that you can't come.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden we had that extra ticket, and Lowe's a little bit further north for you than halfway.
No, it's not that bad.
But it's not that bad.
No, I could do that drive. Not a problem.
That would have kicked ass.
Yeah.
We'll still have to try and figure out some sort of thing.
Yep.
All right, brother. Well, hey, I will... I think that's it.
Sounds good to me.
Cool. So you can talk to us on Twitter machines or on the Facebook machines or whatever. I'm at Superstar Mel on Twitter.
I'm at Aaron S. Bell. Ronnie is at No Ron Internet Bar Collection.
316. Yeah, No Internet Connection. That's him. at No Dropped Call.
Yeah. Yeah, he's Ron. 16.
The show is at
1000 Holds Pod.
That's right. It's
wait, I got it right one, the first time?
The word thousand, the word holds, and the word pod. It's a really long name, and essentially you can't tweet much after that. So by the time you put in that handle, mine, Aaron's, and Ronnie's, you're pretty much left to going, hey, guys, and then you've maxed out your characters. So.
No, didn't Twitter change it so that the names don't count towards your typing now?
Oh, I have no idea.
I know they were supposed to do that. I'm pretty sure they did.
Well, there we go. You learn something new every day. And today, I learned that. So, thanks.
So now you can forget something else that you knew.
Oh, God, I hope not.
You don't do that? You don't? Everything you learn, you try and forget something else?
I don't think I'm that guy. Could be. I mean, I'm not saying I remember everything, but I don't think I'm that guy. Gosh, I hope not. What is wrestling again? No. Anyways,
it's that thing we get upset about.
I know, and I hate
it's a shame.
How hard did we work to be positive? You know, like we didn't want to be like everybody else.
The last few weeks we've been doing pretty good, but this oh man, it's just there was so little good about the pay-per-view and about Raw. And so far, SmackDown's been
Dude, like, I watched Money in the Bank, and I was so sad after. I was like, at least I have the Johnny Kidd tournament to watch. And then I watched that, and I was like...
Yeah, and that too.
What the frig? I mean, if we got a Ring of Honor pay-per-view and a WWE pay-per-view, okay, I'm going to get some satisfaction. If we got a New Japan show and a WWE show or whatever, okay, I'm going to get some satisfaction. Dude.
Yeah.
I got no satisfaction.
It's a shame.
At all. Yeah. I swear to God, if somehow this Ring of Honor pay-per-view I'm going to is bad, I don't know what to tell you. I can't imagine.
You know what's
going to
happen?
What?
It's going to be like some weird storm, and that 3 minutes into the first match, like, not only does the power go out, but something happens and, like, it fries the circuits so that there's no way to get stuff back up and running.
Damn you for saying that. They best be putting on a whole house of dark matches for us then.
Well, you know what? Now I'm glad I'm not going, so I don't have to see the show in the dark.
Jerk. All right, so that's it. Thanks, everyone.
And you're welcome.